Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup Podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
Down with the king topic of the day, and sadly, BT, it's a historic loss from our Knicks. Last night, coughing one up at the world's most famous arena in unbelievable fashion. I still actually can't believe that happened. It was a near-perfect game for about 3.5 quarters, maybe even longer than that, until the final few minutes of the game where the Knicks just couldn't do anything right. I'm in disbelief. I'm in shock. I'm less angry now than I was at 10 a.m., so I'm getting it out of my system a little bit. I'm not feeling overwhelmingly negative about the series, but that was a brutal, gut-wrenching, disgusting loss from the Knicks last night.
As bad as it gets, you know, we can watch sports 30 more years, 40 more years, 50 more years. I don't know that we'll necessarily see something like that. Although it's becoming more and more common in the NBA, these crazy comebacks, and I'm not saying you shouldn't react. Of course you have to react like a... Whether you react like a madman after the game or you just can't sleep or whatever makes you get through the night to get to today to eventually get to tomorrow, you do what you got to do. And we can hit you with every depressing stat that details the choke job, the depth of the choke, but it's one game. And it's one game against a team that I still think the Knicks are very favorably matched up against. I know they've got a really good coach. I know they've got really good shooters and players, and they're tough, and they're accustomed to playing from behind. They did it against the Bucks. You know, they did it against the Cavaliers, and they were down by 7 with, I think, 34.7 seconds to go in game 2. They are, like the Knicks, this should worry you as much as I'm trying to pep you up.
Yeah.
This should worry you a little bit. One of the great things about the Knicks is that they are very comfortable being uncomfortable, but so are the Pacers. And that's been documented time and time again. Their resilience, this might be the most resilient team they've met so far. More than the Celtics, even more than the Pistons, who are scrappy. They are not afraid of the Knicks, but I do think the Knicks are slightly better. And I think we get rocking tomorrow night.
That was one of the things what I said earlier, if you go back, check it out on the free Odyssey app, was where I would be concerned is that the Pacers are unflappable. They, in any situation, they are going to feel like they could win, especially after last night. They must be like Superman because you feel like you can't be beat. When, oh, yeah, you know what? We're down 14. People were saying that about the Knicks, to your point, with the Celtics. Oh, the Knicks got them right where they want them. The difference is this Pacers team is very talented here, whereas the Knicks going up against the Celtics, it was fortunate that, you know, the injuries that the Celtics had, a fully healthy Celtics team, I don't believe it would have gone that same way, whereas this Pacers team, they're legit. They are good, and they're on equal footing with the Knicks. I do think the Knicks are better. But the Pacers have been doing this consistently, and they have to feel like we just took your best shot, which clearly was the Knicks' best shot, and beat you in your building in dramatic fashion. When are you ever going to feel comfortable from a Knicks perspective that you have the Pacers down and out?
No, I'm not. Until they're actually down and out, if they get there, and I believe that they will, though. It's going to be a little tougher now. You know, the other thing, too, the Pacers, they have a lot of experience. I mean, I know the Knicks were banged up last year, and I think we all think, or many of us think, the Knicks would have beaten them if they were healthy. But, you know, at least they got to play more games in the conference finals against the Boston Celtics, the eventual champions. Unlike the Knicks, the Pacers didn't have this massive retooling in the offseason. They pretty much are the same exact team this year that they were a year ago.
Great head coach,
only a little bit, you know, older, a little bit stronger, a little bit more wise, a little bit more seasoned. So let's attack this very quickly here, because I think this will be interesting. We'll get back to the calls, obviously, BT and Sal. So after the Celtics lost those first two games when the Knicks came back, we were talking about, did the Celtics lose it or did the Knicks win it?
Right.
And which one was more? Mm-hmm. And it was my sense then that the Knicks won it more, because when you're down by whatever it was, 20 points with 8 minutes to go, whatever the exact margin was with the time to go, I said, well, if you get that many stops and that many makes, you took it more than they gave it to you. I'm trying to figure out if I feel the same way about last night. I like to be consistent with how I process these types of events, but I actually feel like last night the Knicks gave it away a little bit more than the Celtics did, And I'm a little conflicted with this because of the mistakes the Knicks had.
I was opposite, saying that I thought the Celtics were the team that gave.
I know.
Look at the 3-point shooting. I do think that last night, although I understand the analogy, I like it, and I can see why you're conflicted on it. I don't think it's you going against yourself.
Bad turnovers. Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. That's on the Knicks.
Yeah.
As much as the Pacers took it, it's on the Knicks.
Yeah, but the Pacers, to me, with Naismith, what was he, 8 of 9?
8 of 9.
Come on.
Yep.
8 of 9 from 3-point
range. But how many were open? And that's on the Knicks.
Yeah. I think the Knicks coughed that game up. Not knocking down the free throws, sloppy play, being gassed, the stupid foul, all those different things. There was obviously a little bit of bad luck. Not playing good defense with Bridges down the stretch.
Yep.
I thought the Celtics were to blame for the first two games with their poor shooting, and I think the Knicks were to blame last night, not for the poor shooting, for a litany of reasons. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Greg is calling from Mayapack. What's up, Greg?
Thanks for taking the call, guys. Last night was a repugnant disgrace.
Repugnant.
I couldn't fall asleep for a while, and you know, it you just add last night to a list of Nick moments that are just. You can't make them up. If you try to describe them to somebody, they say you're lying. There's no way that you could have that much of a lead and blow it. You know the thing that really bothered me, and I'm not criticizing Tibbs. I was actually like, look at this. We're whipping them with Brunson on the bench.
Yeah.
Leave him there. Even if he sat till the friggin' whistle and the game is over, the guy got a lot of rest. He'll be ready for game two. BT, you said that you thought he was winded. He was sitting for so long. Yeah. How was he winded at the end of the game?
I was just going to say, like, there was a lot of contact. And just for him to get the ball over the mid-court stripe and then initiate the offense, he's exerting so much. That's what I meant.
Okay, you know what, guys? I need for them, after they've whipped these guys' behinds, to in unison, I don't care who does it, they have to go and stand over Reggie Miller and all grab their throats and give it to him, because I've had enough. I remember that night that Reggie Miller did that.
Forget Reggie, Greg. It's about Halliburton, and thank you for the call. Real quick, Jalen Brunson was gassed. So I'm with you, BT.
He was shot.
I'm not saying that there's an excuse for him to be gassed. He was gassed. You could see that by the three, the air ball at the end. But even before that, you could tell that Brunson was just absolutely winded. And, Greg, it's not about Reggie Miller anymore. Forget Reggie Miller. It's about Halliburton. Now, what kind of celebration would you hand down to Halliburton if the Knicks do come back and win this series? Choke on knees type thing?
Oh, boy.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah, I know. That is going to be beautiful payback if we get there. Let's get there first. I'll come up with something creative if we need to. I got a question for you. I do have a question for you about Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
Has he texted you back yet?
No. I blocked him, actually. I don't want to hear from him.
Good thing he didn't take us up on it. It's turned out by Reggie. Imagine we had him on today.
I'll tell you, yesterday, whenever I texted him on Tuesday, I wanted to hear back from him. Then yesterday, I would like to hear back from him. After last night, I don't want to hear from Reggie Miller. Lose my number. I'm sure the same thing he said to me a couple days ago, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
It's over now. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to think about him. Unfortunately, we got to watch him do these games here.
Yeah. Well, one thing real quick here, Sal. So we've got it a lot today, and it's certainly your prerogative to do it from the callers. I get that, right? But I've heard a lot of you say, I don't want to criticize Tibbs. Why not? Honestly, why not? Like, it's not that hard of a line to straddle. Joe Torre got criticized. Bill Parcells got criticized. It's okay to criticize Tom Thibodeau without coming across as a Tom Thibodeau hater. It's okay. There were myriad malfunctions, some of which were his fault, some of which were not. But you don't need to... I don't think that you need to preface with the calls, I don't want to... Go for it!
Yeah, but here's why. Because they know and respect what he's done for this team.
I know and respect what Joe Torre did for the Yankees. I still criticize Joe Torre.
I'm not saying he
was a champion.
Nobody should be above criticism. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there is hesitation there, and I am one of those people. I believe in Tibbs. Doesn't mean you can't criticize certain moves that we talked about yesterday, the challenge and all that stuff, but how can you not... it's hurtful to criticize somebody who has given you all that Tibbs has, taking this team from the abyss, building the foundation, being an integral part in laying the groundwork to having the success that they've had in recent years. Is it a championship? No, but they've ascended, they've climbed, they've built it different ways. Here they are in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's one game. You, I think, have taken your criticism, and now it's your opinion. You're allowed to go as far as you want, but you remember weeks ago, a month ago, whatever, not believing in Tibbs.
No, I stand by it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you could take it to whatever level you want to. I do think that there are people like me who feel bad. You're right. We shouldn't. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to be criticized, but I'm just saying how I feel, and maybe others, I feel bad criticizing him because I know the foundation that he's built.
And by the way, I appreciate the sensitivity. Like, I truly do. I mean that. But to me, you know, you can be both. You can be somebody who set the culture in motion and we are deeply indebted to. And, you know, listen, this is not, again, fire Tom Thibodeau today. I'm not talking about that. But it's okay to say, hey, we appreciate what you've done. And here we are in the Eastern Conference Finals and we got to get some more wins. We'll get to the NBA Finals. But also understanding that he made some colossal mistakes again last night. Now, I can't possibly prove this, but this does fit my narrative or my beliefs about Tom Thibodeau. I believe if Coach Carlisle is on the Knicks bench last night, Knicks win the game. I have no doubts about that. Can't prove it. There's really nowhere to go with that statement. I believe Rick Carlisle is that much better than Tom.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Mike is calling from Queens. What's up, Mike?
Hello, how are you? So this isn't by any means a criticism of Brunson, who's just changed the face of the franchise. But one thing that I wish Brunson would acknowledge, or at least maybe the coaches would say to him. So when he was on the bench and we went on this run, everybody's involved. The energy's high. OG's involved. McBride's hitting shots. And then Brunson comes in, which I agree with that move. You don't want him sitting. You know, the game wasn't over. But then everything stalls. Like Brunson sometimes needs to take over a game. Like, we won't win unless he takes over a game and has the ball and creates his own shot. Last night was not one of those times. If we can have parts of the game when Brunson needs to take over, where the other players are observing, and then Brunson to understand the energy and then become the facilitator and keep people involved, keep the energy up, keep the gas on. That's what we needed last night. We didn't need Brunson to come in and dominate the ball.
I think you're right, Mike. I think that's an outstanding point, but I think that's who Jalen Brunson is, and it's a lot more amazing than not, but he's more of a two-guard. Like, he's got the two-guard mindset. He's like Iverson in a way that now he doesn't have the burst or the hops that Allen Iverson had. Not nearly the athlete that AI was, but in terms of being ball dominant with a scorer's mentality and you know, a deep portfolio of moves to get to his spot, to get his shot. I mean, Jalen Brunson hunts shots, and that is usually good for us because when he's hunting, he's usually making. But to the caller's point, when it's time to maybe deviate from that and spread the wealth a little bit, it's more two guard, and I think that wins over the point guard part of the brain.
Yeah, but think about what we're saying now. And we've heard from a lot of callers talking about, oh, just leave him on the bench, leave him on. Yeah, okay. You want Jalen Brunson on the bench for Deuce McBride and Camp? Like, come on.
Yeah, I never thought that last night. I never thought that in real time.
We were fortunate to have them go on the run that they did. I think it's encouraging moving forward in the series that you saw some players that can spell Brunson and give him a rest. And Brunson obviously being gas, well, you would think the rest would have helped him there. It did not in that particular case. I'm not saying Brunson was great down the stretch. I don't think he was sloppy with the basketball, all those different things. But let's not make it like you're better off without Jalen Brunson. We would all kill to have the ball in Brunson's hands with a chance to win in the fourth quarter. That's been the recipe.
I'm with you. But you have to understand this, guys. Like, think about the purest point guards. I'll just pull John Stockton. I'm not saying he's the best, but I'll say John Stockton, right? So, you know, even though they never won a championship, probably not the best example, but he was amazing. And there's just too many great players in his way, otherwise he would have been a champion. The point is that when the Utah Jazz needed a structured half-court set, a late game bucket, late situation bucket, he was so used to delivering the ball to whether, obviously, Mailman, but also Byron Russell and some other players too. He was so used, he was so used to doing that because that's how he played from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. And he never really deviated from that. Now, some nights he'd get 20, but he was always a pass-first guy. when you're Brunson and you're hunting 30, 35 points out of necessity, because that's kind of what makes the Knicks when he's on, you can't expect him to, with a minute and 9 seconds left or 13 seconds left, morph into John Stockton.
Right. Well, true point guards in our mind, in our era, true point guards were facilitators.
Yeah.
Now the true point guards are scorers. So he's not the facilitator of this. Josh Hart, to me, would be the guy on the ball, going to facilitate, move the ball around. With Brunson, it can be a lot of, you know, hero ball sounds degrading, but the one-on-one stuff or trying to create a little bit on his own. But that's, I mean, that's what you want in today's NBA, right? Mm-hmm. We can talk about Dame Lillard forever, Donovan Mitchell. Again, I know that, you know, Mitchell more of a two guard as well, but think about it. An on-the-ball guard,
yep.
That's kind of what you want. That's what Brunson is, and it is positionless basketball. So he's not Derek Harper or Stockton, to your point. Right,
Harper, Mo Cheeks.
Well, whatever. These guys would
Dennis Johnson
would be more facilitators, get the ball down low.
Yeah, no question.
That's not Jalen Brunson. That's not his game, and I'm not going to.
It's probably not the NBA anymore,
well,
by the way.
The point,
not
yeah.
just Jalen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Frank is in White Plains. What's up, Frank?
Hey, bud.
I can't put all blame on the coach.
Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
I tell you, most of it is his fault. Number one, he should never keep, almost all fourth quarter, he keep Brunson out. Number one. Number two, look at the time. He should control the damn time on the shooting. He let, you know, they have a 14 points lead with a little bit over 2 minutes left. He is to be blamed for this because he didn't really coach the good game on the end. That's the bottom line, okay?
You know, I disagree with that, Frank, and thank you for the call. I don't think that it wasn't he coached a bad game. Matter of fact, the majority of the game, it was a great game. It was one of the best games the Knicks have played this postseason, especially in that fourth quarter when the bench was taking over and they were starting to pull away. Down the stretch, nobody was perfect. I'm not. If you had to blame one singular person or reason for the Knicks' loss last night, what would it be? Would you credit the Pacers?
First of all, you have to credit the Pacers. Yeah, okay. I think to not do that is ridiculous. So I'm going to give them a time.
Like probably Neesmith would be the primary reason, because with all the other stuff that went against the Knicks, if this guy doesn't shoot lights out,
yep.
Not missing all of those threes, open or not, we saw guys last night, but both the Knicks and the Pacers having open looks and missing them. It's basketball. Not easy to make. Even in the open look, sometimes you think too much. Neesmith was knocking down every bleeping one.
That's sick. I will actually give you my order of culpability. Yeah. Most culpable number one last night was the refs. Okay. Number two to me was Tom Thibodeau.
Are you saying because of the goaltend, or is there another specific?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of plays. The play went with OG Adonobi.
Yeah.
Now, that's one we kind of glossed over.
But even by then, it was still kind of over. I know the challenge.
I thought, I know it was a tough call. I didn't think there was enough evidence to overturn it, number one, and that's one thought. But I also thought that OG's hand, I thought he had more control myself. It was close. It wasn't like 80-20. 55-40. I thought he had a little more possession, and I thought that there was a motion. You see his hand flick through like he's trying to follow up the shot. That was my interpretation. But I thought most culpable were the refs. I thought number two was Tom Thibodeau, and I think number three for me was Jalen Brunson. That's the order for me.
I would go Brunson more so than Tibbs. I would go OG Anunoby missing the free throw, or even that call that going his way. The Anunoby missed, you know, half dunk,
layup,
half layup.
Dunk, yep.
Yeah, I would go Brunson one, Anunoby two. I mean, obviously, I'm crediting Naismith above all, but if you're looking for blame, and there's bad luck with the refs. I can't get on Tibbs. I don't think that this was his fault. I don't think it was glaring that the head coach screwed this game up when the players had to do one of any several things differently for a different result.
By the way, I was close to flipping, putting Tibbs one, refs two, because I don't like to bail out a team like that. But last night was fairly egregious enough. I'm cool with it. Here's the thing. Like, if you're just watching, it's not like, you know, you watch an NFL game and you're like, oh my God, why does he not burn a timeout? You got the 2 minute warning. Like, there's just an egregious mismanagement of a certain situation. That's not what happened here with Tom Thibodeau. I'm not saying that at all. But there were too many checkpoints when you had that big of a lead, whether it was an adjustment on defense to alter and just present some resistance beyond the stripe, whether it was a timeout to thwart their energy, whether it was a timeout for a different substitution. I know he didn't miss the free throws. He didn't make the bad calls. But those final 6-7 minutes there, Tom Thibodeau simply has to be better if the Knicks want to win a championship.
PT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019. We're talking Knicks. The heat is on. PT and Sal back on the Fan on this Thursday afternoon. 888-808-1019. Doesn't feel like Memorial Day weekend, does it? I know the big party tomorrow with DJs, with Boomer and Geo. The morning show will be out there having some fun.
Stinks.
As we kick off the summer with Memorial Day weekend. Dude, it's like 40 degrees. It's raining.
It's cold,
out.
Man. It's actually really cold. It's cold. I wore shorts to work yesterday. I was freezing.
Yeah, it's too cold. I open the pool. I got to worry about that now. I'm probably going to have to empty it out with all this rain and the cold. I don't want the heater on because I'm not going to be going in anyway, so I don't want to waste the gas on the what the hell is this? It's supposed to be Memorial Day weekend celebrating the summer.
Do you have outdoor sprinklers for the lawn? Do you turn them on yet? Yeah, right? They're turned up by now. No? You didn't turn them on yet?
No, they're on, but I should have turned them on. I got the, they have like the water sensor or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so
well,
it should be on and not.
Yep.
But I don't trust that water sensor. And when it's raining.
Neither do I. I was going off the other day. It's supposed to like once a certain amount of water hits, they're supposed to be shut off. And we do them every other day in the morning.
Right.
In increments, like whatever, 15 minutes in each zone. We have 8 zones, whatever. And I'm like, why? It's raining out. I walk out. Why the hell are these going off?
Wasting water, dude, which is wasting money.
It's all a scam.
I got to text my wife, although she wouldn't know what the hell to do here. You're right. It is all
a racket.
But I want to shut that thing off, make sure that that water's not. We don't
I've
need
done
it.
That before.
We get money.
I've done that before.
Yep. BT and Sal.
Can't overfeed the arborvitae, Sal.
I know.
Make sure those girls are in good shape.
And it's not like the grass is going to get burned, obviously.
No. Although too much, oversaturation could. Suffocate roots, and it could be, too much water's not good.
You're more on top of this than I am. Looked when the weather is going to, I guess
Oh, it's going to be really nice. It's going to start, the weekend's going to be good. It's not going to be incredibly warm. It's going to be sunny over the weekend, maybe a high of 70 on Saturday or 60-something.
Monday, high of 71.
Yeah, we're going to get back there. This is just kind of, I was going to say an anomaly, but listen, the weather pattern's so whacked out, and as much as I follow a lot of things about the world, I've said this before, I cannot offer anything intelligent about global warming. I don't denounce it. I just don't know anything about it.
Just start recycling, will you?
I do.
Yeah, I know.
Here's what I know. Here's what I do know, though. Like, when I said this to you, it didn't hit you. Like, you were like, huh? I think you'll get it now. It took you a minute to get it, but you got it back then as well. I think what's happening now, our Aprils and Mays or what our Octobers used to be like back in the day. Like, it's flipped.
Okay, but we don't know why.
No, that's where I stop. I can't offer anything intelligent past that point, except the observation that it seems like it's flipped a bit.
So then September and October are going to be warmer.
Oh, like, they always are?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, there's times, I'm watching my son play football. It's like 89 degrees on a Saturday in September. Absolutely.
Right. So really, pool season should be like maybe June. You start opening up around June. You want it open by Memorial Day weekend.
No, for sure, now.
And you used to be before you close it before September or around September, Labor
Day
after Labor Day.
Yes,
but now you go to October with it, maybe.
Well, you can. What happened before we moved into our home, we were in a condo in a community, right? And they had a communal pool, and they started to, I guess they adjusted to the warming, whatever's happening with the weather, where they would keep it open, not every day, but every Saturday through September.
Right. Okay.
And we've been in our home for 7 years, so that was a while ago. It's a mess.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Ronald is calling from NYC. What's up, Ronald?
Hey, guys.
You're in Manhattan, NYC? Where exactly are you?
Right now, I'm in the Inwood area.
Okay.
Love it.
There you go, Inwood. Well, what's
Inwood,
up?
Inwood, it was up to no good.
What's up, Ronald?
It's got sound.
I'm a Knicks fan.
I like got that. Inwood always up to no good.
I know.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Even Hollywood trying to get up in this. All right, go ahead, Ronnie.
I'm a Knicks fan, and I'm feeling optimistic about the Knicks series just because if you watch the first quarter, the Pacers came out gun blazing, They scored six field goals, and then they took a timeout. So they haven't missed yet, and Knicks is still catching up with them, 6-for-10 field goal percent, and they come out the timeout, and Pacers is still, they went without missing until 10, and then they missed. But a Miles Turner and all those guys stepped up real good. So my takeaway is that the Knicks took that. They took that blow and somehow came back. And I just don't know how they lost the lead after that. Then I'm dumbfounded after that.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem, Ronald. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I mean, early on, BT, we didn't really discuss the beginning of the game because it was all about the end of the game. But early on, the Pacers were not missing a shot.
Man.
But still, the Knicks weathered the storm. It was frustrating. Like, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, oh,
it was fun, actually. It's a good pace.
Right. But exactly. It was a fun pace. It was a fun game. I was loving every second of that game, even with it being tight and back and forth. I know the Knicks had the lead at the half and third quarter, whatever, still tight game. But that was a fun basketball game. Good energy, good pace to it, good shot making, good offense there. Not much defense, but and then the Knicks started to pull away, and then the collapse of all time. Like, see, it's not just a loss, and it's not just a bad loss. That is a historic loss. When something happens for the first time ever in nearly 1,000 games.
Yes, 970 to be exact.
That is that's why I'm having a hard time of letting this one go. Yes, it is just one game. Yes, it is a best of seven. No, the series is not over. We know that. But, dude, that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened ever in the history of the sport to where the Knicks blew or a team blew that big of a lead with that little time to go.
Up 14 or more with 2.5 minutes to go or less in the fourth quarter. Last 27 years, who knows, maybe it happened back. But right. Without the three-point shot, there's no way that was happening with George Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers. I'm just going to take a guess. Or the Syracuse Nats. So I'm looking back at our text chain from last night, you and I, right? And by the way, how sick is that Brunson shirt that I
love
sent
that.
You?
Yeah, I love
my
that.
Friend, so I got to rock it after a win. My friend sent me the really cool, like the sign that he makes when he makes the three. It's a RotoWear. Awesome. So I sent Sal a picture of that. You know, you're sick, a cat ball, and we're going back and forth. Sal shooting M3s, which is what you've been saying you want Cat to do.
Yeah, finally.
We're having a good time, and I'm like, they look awesome. You are perfect offense, drive and kick, get to the line, knock down the three, utilizing everybody, love the matchup for him. And I wrote, this is the last thing after this, we didn't say anything. I said, yep, I said, no doubt, but this is still the type of pace that Indy wants. They play 9 or 10, we don't. So far, so great, but thinking big picture for the series. And I wrote that to you. Because as the game's unfolding, even when the Knicks had the lead, that's why they didn't foul Mitchell Robinson. We talked about that. Because when you do that, you stagnate the game, and they don't want to do that. They want to get up and down, free flow, and no stoppages. So even when the Knicks were looking good, I was – and I'm not usually skewing negative like, oh, we're up big, we're going to find a way to lose. No, if we're up big, I'm saying we're going to find a way to win. I always skew optimistically with that. But there was something about the pace of the game last night that did worry me.
BT and Sal on the fan. Steve is in Flushing. What's up, Steve?
Steve-O.
Guys, what's going on?
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing okay. A little shell-shocked from yesterday, as you guys are also. But listen, BT, you just brought up the pace. That's one of the main things I wanted to talk about. Listen, the Knicks had, what, 5 days off, 4 days off before game one? And Indiana had, what, 7 days off? And that's probably why the pace was so, you know, frantic. But the Knicks were gassed at the end of that, and they had 5 days off. Just what do you think is going to happen now? They're going to play every other day for the next, let's say 5-6 games of this series. They're going to be, listen, by game five, the Knicks are going to be like, to me, even if they tie it at 2-2 going into game five, at the pace that they're playing, this favors Indiana. And, I mean, I just listen, the Knicks as a franchise have never won a series in their history when they lose game one at home. Like, it doesn't bode well for these guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the history is what it is. I got you. But again, before last night, 970 games with the numbers that we just gave you before, up 14 with 2.5 to go, nobody had ever lost. So, not to spit in the face of history, but this is a new team with a new identity trying to carve out a championship legacy and hope they get there. I know it's, and listen, I just said what I said about the pace, so I'm with you. I obviously agree. I was thinking it last night. But I also don't think that every game is going to mirror each other. And you're going to have foul issues on their end. You might have an injury one way or the other. Not that I'm hoping for, but, it's part of the deal. You might have a different whistle in game two, which I suspect we will. So I don't think, now, if it does look like this the rest of the way, Knicks might lose in five. But given that losing the series, they might lose fast. The onus is on the Knicks to change the style, not entirely, but just kind of flip it. Right now, the Knicks are against the ropes. Get to the middle of the ring. And good fighters are able to do that, and that's got to be led by Tom Thibodeau and their best player.
I thought definitively going into last night and into the series, the Knicks were the better team. I don't know if I could say that as definitively or as confidently after watching it last night.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll jar your confidence. I'm still...
I mean, the Pacers are deep. We knew this. I'm not caught off guard by how good they are.
Uh-huh.
But
they're not afraid of us. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's the thing. They just have uber confidence, dude. That is tough to, and they're good. They're good. They're confident. They're smart. They're well coached. They've been as resilient a group. Name the team in NBA history that has done what they've done here throughout one postseason series where they're coming back when it looks like they're dead. It's over. The game's over. They've been road warriors as well. Nothing phases this team.
No. And I listen, what Sal's referring to here is, you know, you go back to that Bucks series, which was game five. They're used to this. That's why they are as comfortable being uncomfortable as our Knicks are. They trailed by 7 with 34 and a half to go in overtime. They won. That was the Bucks series. They trailed the Cavs by 7 in game 2 with 46.7 to go. They won. So they are used to playing under stress and, you know, mounting comebacks, and they can score points in a lot of bunches. They can get to the rim when they want to, but everybody could shoot, including their big Miles Turner. They've got a little more depth, and they walk into the series than the Knicks. They walk into the series, even though we know the Knicks were diminished physically a year ago. In their mind, they're saying, all right, we beat them. And then the other thing, yeah, we know that they're more talented this year with the addition of Cat and Bridges, but while the Knicks were making tweaks and trying to find that chemistry, the Pacers just had a carryover of chemistry, because their team is exactly the same as it was a year ago. So is it going to be tough? I hear you. My confidence, my faith in the Knicks' ability to win the series or clearly being the better team, I'm going to, like you said, a little damaged, but I still believe they're the better team.
When we come back, we'll power.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
...that makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're up with the worst losses... Top five worst losses that we've each experienced.
Now it's time to power up with BT and Sal.
All right, BT, we're powering up with actually some bad moments. Top five worst losses in our fandom. Let's go number five through number one. You want to start us off?
Sure. I could easily say the time I lost a Tecmo Bowl and threw it out the window in college because I lost, you know, $25. I mean, there's a lot of losses to choose from.
That's a good one.
All right. You know that story. I've told you that on the air. Number five to me, and I mentioned this before, and I didn't really think it would make my list here, but I really do have to go St. John's, Arkansas.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's the most, it's a very unique loss here. Because the euphoria, and you were here next to me every day.
Yeah.
You know, you went to the Garden, you talked to Rick, you were enjoying the St. John's run as well. And it just, like, when it ends. And it was so abrupt. And I remember, you know, 31 wins, Big East regular season. Supposed to win that game, favorite, a two seed, all the things. It was an amazing season. But I just remember getting back to my hotel room, I'm like, wow. It's really over. And in college, especially with the transfer portal, it's never the same. So, I mean, it was an amazing experience, but and that's personal for me because I've been doing the game so long and I've never called an NCAA tournament win. And I'm thinking Sweet 16, going to San Francisco. It ended hard. It was rough.
All right. For me, number five, I'm going with last night's game.
You are.
It cracks the top five for me. There are others. Look, I mean, as sports fans, we all remember the losses, the brutal losses that we endure. This one last night was so bad and such a historic collapse. And the only reason why it's not higher is because it's only game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. But think about how bad a loss has to be in current day to impact 45-year-old Sal versus 25-year-old Sal. Mm. That was such a horrific, unbelievable loss last night. It has to be on my top five worst feelings. Dude, I'm telling you, I was sitting there just despondent watching the TV and watching the replays and watching the post-game stuff and like, I cannot believe they just lost this bleeping game. So it was number five. Obviously not the worst, but the fact that it would crack top five shows you how bad that loss was last night for me.
That's interesting. Respect. Now, if this is 10 years from now, would it find a way into mine? If they were to lose the series, because I'm still confident, right. but I hear you. All right, number four for me. Now, understand, I'm answering these how I feel in the moment.
Yes.
And this could be higher. So, obviously, 98 was a glorious season for the Jets. 12 wins, divisional championship, losing Denver. Blake Spence, you know, the block punt. They're winning at the half, and then it unravels. We would have played your team in the Super Bowl. I really, you push back. I think we would have smoked you guys. Who the hell knows? Whatever. I think I'm going to get my first championship. The loss, though, is actually the next year. Week one, 1999. I'm at the game. I'm in the old Meadowlands, right? It's the Jets and the Pats. And Vinny ruptures his Achilles. And at that point, I really didn't know much about the Achilles. Like, I wound up doing mine maybe 9-10 years after that. But back then, the Achilles, just like an old man, Achilles, whatever, I don't have to worry about that. And I just remember Keyshawn's reaction post-game and everything. I knew the season was over to the point when Tom Tupper, the punter, came in and threw a touchdown to Keyshawn Johnson. My buddy Rob, who I used to go to the games with, he's jumping. He's like, yeah, we're winning. I didn't even celebrate because I knew that moment the season was over. Walking out of that stadium was next level hurt, dude.
I like the way that you describe your list because I went under the same thing. Just my feelings when enduring these losses, not necessarily just the magnitude of it. Number four for me, this was both the feelings I had and the magnitude of it. And it's actually surprising. It shows how many bad losses I've had as a sports fan to endure. Game 5 of the 2000 World Series. Now, Game 1 was actually worse as far as the game goes because that was a more gut-wrenching loss, and you knew once the Mets blew an opportunity in Game 1 against the Yankees in 2000, they probably weren't going to win the series. But being at Game 5, seeing the Piazza ball that I thought was gone off the bat fall in the glove of Bernie Williams, seeing the Yankees celebrate on Shea Stadium turf, having to walk out through that.
How is that not number one?
Well,
about as bad as it gets. Good God, slinking to the cars or the trains?
There's three.
After the Yankees celebrate on Shea Stadium dirt?
I know.
Three
that I have worse than that.
Were at that game. Brutal. That's tough.
Tough to top that one, but somehow my fandom has. Anyway, that was number four.
That's a good one. I'm going to go a little baseball here. And this is different. This is now, obviously, this hurts as a Yankee fan. But I'm going to go with the 2001 World Series, and I go directly to 9/11. That's all I go to. Yeah, listen, when the Yankees were up 3-0 on the Red Sox, obviously, and the Red Sox came in and they dented Kevin Brown, and you know they just went nuts in a grand slam. That was crushing. But the 9/11 tie-in to like want it so badly for the city, for the Yankee fans, not that it was going to change anything, unfortunately, but just a moment of happiness, a temporary respite from the sadness, which took over our entire world, country, but really our city. I wanted that. I mean, it was a different one. Yeah, I wanted to beat the Mets. Yeah, I wanted to beat the Braves in 96, and again, the Braves and the Padres. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted that so bad. With that broken bat, I just sat there comatose. I'm like, wow. It almost made me question when I say things happen for reason. My mom's always said that, and I believe it. I believe it. But that one tested the limits of that. That was one I could not believe they did not win.
Yeah, it didn't seem right after all that went on. Although, like I always bring up, you know, at that particular point, I was rooting against the Yankees. I could root for the country, but I was rooting against the Yankees. Not going to lie. That was one of my greatest sports wins, the 2001 Diamondbacks. Number three for me, Game 7, 2006, NLCS. Mm. And the reason why I have that more painful than the Yankees one is because I fully went to that game expecting the Mets to win. And I also believe that that Mets team was the most worthy Mets team of a World Series win that I have seen post-1986. That 2006 team should have been a World Series winning team. And to see that Game 7 unfold the way that it did, and to hear when Yadier Molina hit that home run, I was in the upper level, to hear the dugout celebrating, the Cardinals dugout celebrating amongst 50,000 people that had just been silenced that was a sickening feeling. I still can't even believe that that happened. The Mets have a bunch of losses, but that one will stick with me because I believed in that team that they were going to be the World Series champs. So Game 7, 2006, NLCS, Beltran, bat on the shoulder, Wainwright, that whole thing.
Nasty.
That was number three for me.
I mean, I'm just looking at the box score from that date. I mean, Reyes, LaDuca, Beltran, Delgado,
Floyd
Wright,
with a
Sean
big pinch
Green.
Hit, trying to come up. He didn't get the job done later in that game.
Yeah, Valentin, wow.
Yeah.
Chavez, yeah. I mean, I was on the air, actually, at 10:50 when that happened. I could not believe he did not swing. All right, man, you've walked out of Shea.
Dude,
with some,
I can't even get to the final regular season game in 2008 at Shea. That was an embarrassment where they had the celebration.
When
after.
They walked out, right? Everybody walked out from center field, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. After the fact, the Mets were eliminated on the final day of the year in the final home. God. No, I've had some bad ones at Shea.
All right. Number two, I don't know if this is going to make your list because we're running out of space, but it very easily could, and it might. You win game seven, miss finger roll 95. 96, pardon me. 95, yeah. So 94, of course, they lose to the Rockets. Now, as much, Mattingly's my all-time favorite athlete, you know that. But there's a different energy, there's a different, like, what you put out as you watch a basketball game versus a baseball game. And also through the last 6, 7, 8 years, Donnie was hurt. I don't know that I've ever hurt for a player and wanted for a player as much as I wanted for Ewing. And you just knew it, the way it looked, and just the despondency. It just looked awkward where he got the ball. He looked a little indecisive. Then I'm like, oh, he's going. Oh, he's going to yoke it. Oh, no, he's going to roll it. Oh, no, back rim, it's out. What? And you see the Pacers, Mark Jackson celebrating, a New York kid celebrating our low moment. And I saw Patrick, like, just looking around like, wow. That's when you have to think he's just never going to win a championship, because then it was over. Then the next year, Don Nelson came in, and then he was gone. Then Van Gundy. To me, that was the end of the true, even though they made it in 99, the true Knicks. That one crushed.
Trying to go over all the other losses and trying to see now what you have for your number one.
You'll never guess.
My game.
You will never guess.
My number two?
Yep.
Game 7, 1995, semifinals, the Ewing finger roll.
Wow, okay, there you go.
So we agree on that one. I told you the story recently. I remember I remember watching the TV in disbelief. I couldn't believe that it was over when Ewing misses, the ball bounces off the back of the rim, and I'm like, oh my God, like all you invested after the finals the year before, and you're thinking, all right, well, this year we're going to get back, we're going to win it all.
Yep.
Having that happen and the sudden finality to it. And then me, I had to go vent in the backyard, dunking the basketball out of frustration. I called the station, Bill Daughtry. I remember where I was in my bedroom, my little bedroom in my parents' house watching it. I didn't know what to do with myself. That one hurt. Didn't have to be there to feel the pain of that one. And you're right, it was even more than just that one game. That hurt me more than game seven of the finals the year before. Like, I was hurt by me personally. Mm-hmm. I was hurt by that, but this one, the 95 one, was devastating.
Well, and it was also his 11th year, so you kind of knew as you started to time. And he didn't quite look the same. He wasn't as bouncy. He was still really good, but he wasn't quite Patrick anymore.
All right, what's your number one?
Number one. All right, so I can give you the million guesses. You'll never guess this. To me, it's 1995, Game 5, wild card, Yankee-Seattle. Because I knew, number one, the manner in which it happened.
Remember that game.
Of course. Bullet down the line. Edgar, I was always terrified of him. That Seattle team was tough, as even though the Yankees won the first two, Donnie had a home run, hit .417 in the series. He was balling out. Tag, I slipped that in there. You know, Griffey flying around the bit. Brent on the call. Brent Musburger on the call. The relay to, you know, for, was that Gerald? I think that was Gerald Williams who got it in left field. The plate layer, it's in a pile of dirt, and Vince Coleman. It was so abrupt, but I also didn't know, but I strongly felt, almost like a force thing. Because I love Mattingly so much, I feel like the force told me at that moment he's going to retire, even though we didn't really know. So when I saw Donnie walking off the field, I'm like, I just watched his last game. It's over for Mattingly, and nobody loved Mattingly like me.
That's a great one. Oh, I mean, look, we've had some bad losses. For me, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing or go into great detail, but nothing will ever beat. I don't think in the history of sports fandom, nothing will ever beat being a fan of the idiot, loser, pathetic Atlanta Falcons who blew the worst lead in the history of football in Super Bowl 51, up 28-3, late third quarter. The fact that that loss was hung on me as a fan, I have to question the sports gods and think that that's not fair. Why them? I could see the Yankees having a bad loss. I could see the Knicks having a bad, like New York, want to hit. Yeah. Like, who gives a crap about the Falcons to be the biggest chokers in the history of sports? I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget that game. I will never, ever get over the result of that game. I will never be the same fan that I was prior to that game. It's impossible
that
to
changed
be so.
That changed
you. 100%. You can't overcome that. I'm sorry, there's no coming back from that.
What did you do? Like, do you walk around? Because you were with... Were you guys married yet?
Yeah.
You were just married or still engaged? Or going out? I forgot.
No, I think we were engaged, about to be married later that year.
As the story goes, Sal's future wife brought a friend who's
over,
not a big football fan, so the viewing... Just the whole vibe was compromised.
After everybody left and was asleep, I sat there and watched the post game over and over. I immersed myself in the misery and disbelief.
You did. You embraced
team,
it, huh?
just blew this bleeping game, and I will never, ever, ever forgive them for that. That's why I hate Dan Quinn to this day.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
That makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.